Get to Old Navy for Star Spangled Style. Right now, everything's on sale, up to 60% off. That's right, get everything from tees, shorts, dresses, and swim, all at 60% off. Now till July 7th at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid through 7/7, select styles only.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Morning, Manpreet. Let's continue that conversation that Melissa started on the oil movement. What is your initial thought on this?
Morning. It's correct. The market is tightening, and if anything, it's tightening faster than what we in most of the market expected at the start of the year. Remember that in an average non-recessionary year, global demand tends to grow by about 1 million barrels per day. And from the supply side, U.S. production has begun to contract. It has been contracting for a little while now. So the demand-supply gap appears to be closing, and there are a number of one-off issues with producers worldwide. But we do think, the market remains on track for that demand-supply gap to clear, to tighten further as we go through the rest of this year.
Do you expect the OPEC to do anything surprising going forward?
It's unlikely because, if you go back and think about, why the current policy was put to work, to begin with, nothing's really changed on that front. If you think about, OPEC producers versus shale oil, U.S. shale oil producers, many shale producers still say that, should prices actually go back above $60, they may consider, restarting a lot of production that has gone offline. So it doesn't necessarily make sense for OPEC producers to suddenly start, producing more, to cut back production. So we don't really think anything would change dramatically on that front.
Do you think this will be a temporary measure? How long do you think it will be until we see the next shift?
That's a really tough one because I think we're now also getting into, the political arena plus, at what point, does OPEC no longer able to produce enough to meet global demand. For us, we're just focused on, the next 12-month outlook. Demand-supply gap, of course, if anything, might already be closed or is fairly close to being closed. The only caveat is that global inventories are still quite high. They're still, pretty much at record levels. So we do actually have quite a bit of inventory buffer to run through before we really need to start worrying about whether there's enough supply out there.
With the inventory supply right now still, a lot, do you think that there will be some key implications on the currencies, for instance, the ringgit, other major currencies like the US dollar, Japanese yen, and so on?
Well, from the currency market, and if oil prices do continue to creep gradually higher, that is positive and negative for a number of currencies. So for oil producers, for the ringgit, gradually higher oil prices are a positive. And you can see that, I guess, across the commodity space, there are reasons to expect commodity prices across the board to be, we think, a little bit better supported. So even currencies like the Canadian dollar, for example. I think the potential losers could be, currencies like the Indian rupee. We're still quite constructive on the currency, but on its own, higher oil prices, if anything, are a bit of a headwind.
Do you think that there will be any surprises that lie in supply?
I think the big surprises lie in sort of the individual OPEC producers, which are dealing with domestic political issues. So that's where most of the supply surprises have come from recently, and we think that will continue. So we take a few examples. So Libya, for example, does not produce very much. It actually does have the potential to increase output by a fair amount at short notice, but obviously dependent on their ability to do so. On the other hand, you have countries like Venezuela, which clearly are going through some domestic political pain. So they are a significant producer, but some of their production could be at risk if things deteriorate domestically. So there is room for a lot of one-off surprises, and that can lead to price movement sort of short-term. We saw prices move lower recently, for example, when a lot of closed output in Alaska or Nigeria came back on stream. But I think it's important to cut through these temporary surprises and just look through, where the trend is going. And we think the trend is clearly for a tightening market.
Still on commodity, it seems that gold, for instance, they're moving in an area where it seems to have delinked from the traditional markers, including they have delinked from US dollars, inflation. Why do you think this is happening? In fact, is this a trend that you see happening going on for the long time?
Well, the big jump in gold prices happened, you know, after the Brexit vote most recently. And if you take away sort of the link with inflation, take away the link with the dollar, you know, that really leaves risk aversion or demand for sort of a safe haven asset as the main driver. And we think that's what's really going on. For us, that has been an increasing theme, an investment theme since the start of the year. We think it's, you know, still about owning equity and equity-like assets, but equally balancing them out with, you know, some safe haven assets. You know, investment-grade bonds are one of them, but, you know, gold is a great example of that. So, again, from a long-term perspective, we think, you know, there is some merit. Often people argue against gold, saying, look, it has a zero yield. That's one of the reasons why we haven't liked it, you know, for some time. But reality is with about a third of the world's bond markets now trading with a negative yield, a zero yield doesn't look so bad anymore. So we think there is a space for small, but, you know, still a positive allocation now in investment portfolios.
Gold futures surrendered earlier gains. They basically finished lower yesterday as strength in the U.S. stock market picks up. Do you think there is an opportunity for the market to take profit in the near term on gold price?
Short term, yes. I think in the near term, the one factor that worries us most is positioning. Similar to us, it looks like a lot of other people in the market are holding a very similar view on gold. And if you look at, you know, measures of positioning, a whole lot of the market already looks like they're long gold. So usually in the past, such extreme positioning does tend to lead a bit of an unwind. So a bit of profit taking, a bit of a pullback is likely in the short term. But I think, again, if investors are looking to sort of add that to investment allocations where they don't own some, you know, that might provide the opportunity to go away and add that allocation.
Now, according to the WGC, for the first half of the year, investment demand for gold is up 16% from the previous first half of the year. Do you think that there is an insatiable need for something like gold in the market, particularly in investors that don't normally invest in gold?
Absolutely. And I think what was really interesting about that WGC data is that, you know, demand actually contracted in almost all other areas. It was really investment demand overwhelmingly the driver. I think that ties back both to the demand for a risk, for a safe haven asset, but I think there's also a factor to do here with interest rates. I mean, we spoke about one-third of the world's bond market trading at negative yields. There is concern that could, you know, rise. You can see the Bank of England being the latest, you know, bank to actually join, you know, cut rates, and they're not now far from zero either. So I think in that kind of environment, you know, it does depend which currency you're thinking in terms of. It's common for us to think in terms of the ringgit or, you know, the US dollar. But for British investors, they're thinking, you know, in pound sterling terms. And when you start thinking in pound sterling terms or euro terms, then suddenly gold with its, you know, zero yield starts looking quite interesting when your other choices are a negative yield.
And finally, let's have a weekly roundup of some of the key equities globally. What are your thoughts on the S&P 500 and Dow? They're still at high levels. Do you think we're going to expect some drop soon?
We're still pretty constructive on U.S. equities. I mean, that's still, you know, one of the markets where we would be willing to take on equity risk. We're much more selective than we used to be earlier, but that's still a market where we'd be happy to do so. And I think a lot of that has to do with what we're seeing, you know, coming through in the earnings, you know, for the second quarter of the year. You know, surprises have been to the upside, but I think what's more interesting is that it looks like we are on track for earnings growth, which has been negative for more than a few quarters now, to potentially return back to positive earnings growth later this year, which is primarily coming from the energy sector. So from that perspective, yes, you could see a mild pullback, you know, as sort of the earnings season moves behind us. That wouldn't be a surprise based on history, but not something we'd be excessively worried about. I think we'd really be focused on whether that growth in, you know, earnings is likely to come back in the second half of this year. We think it will.
Right. Enjoy your Friday, Manpreet. That was Manpreet Gill, Head of Fixed Income, Currencies and Commodities Strategy for Wealth Management Group at Standard Chartered in Singapore.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card.
Next stop, Graham Street. And Brian in the khaki shorts, your GNL energy bill went up 60% this month. Seems like you'd want to know. Stand clear of the closing doors.
So meet Eno, the Capital One assistant that catches things that might look wrong, like increases to a recurring bill, then sends an alert to your phone and helps you fix it. Eno, another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details. Limitations apply.